south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Here's a little update on my upcoming November Expat Insider Seminar, which will be taking place in Guatemala and El Salvador from November 13th through 20th. Since I need a close headcount pretty soon to book hotels and make other arrangements, I previously made the cutoff for the early bird discount, which is, by the way, $1,000 off the regular price. I previously made that cutoff date October 15th to receive that discount. Well, I'm moving that date up to September 20th, so you've got a little over 2 weeks to get in on that discount. Now, as I mentioned before, about 95% of attendees take advantage of that discount, so I know on the day the discount ends the final headcount pretty accurately. So I'm sort of guided by hotels and their booking and accommodation policies, because, you see, we always strive to keep our group in the same hotels, which makes it much more convenient for everyone. So again, as this show first goes out on September 4th and the early bird discount ends on September 20th, you've got 2 weeks to get in on that $1,000 discount. Oh, and of course, for all you repeat offenders, we always have repeat offenders, you get an additional $1,000 discount off the early bird price. So for all the info and sign-up details, go to expatplanb.com. That's expatplanb.com. Then click on the seminar link in the middle of the page. All right, now let's talk a little bit about learning your Spanish once you get down here, which is something I'd say about 70 to 80% of gringos never really do. Mostly because 70 to 80% of gringos and expats live in gringoized areas where it's not really necessary to speak Spanish. Or so they believe. A big fault in the system, if you ask me. Reminds me of Latinos I meet down here in Latin America who've lived up in the States for 10, 20, even 30 years. They come back down here for vacation. Of course, they're 100% fluent in Spanish, but their English absolutely sucks. And for me, it's so hard to believe someone could live up in the States for that many years and not absorb English. I'd say it's an absolute failure of the system to let government schools and forms and street signs, etc., to be in Spanish so foreigners could adapt. You see what it's done, of course. It's dissuaded immigrants from wanting to assimilate. So they never really do, and it's a dirty shame. But you see that all the time happening here in Latin America with gringos and expats as well. A very big percentage don't learn Spanish, so they don't assimilate. Though it seems Latino governments are not foolish enough to have government signs and forms in schools in English. Anyway, we all certainly want to learn Spanish, don't we? Though most of us never do. Now, as for me, since I've always been a language dunce, I can speak pretty authoritatively on this subject, since by hook and crook I finally was able to learn the Spanish language. It took me about 5 years of living down here, though, before it actually kicked in. By the way, you might think it's a slow and gradual process. And the truth is, for me, at around 3 or 4 years, I thought, I'm never going to learn this. I just don't get it. I thought, I'm just going to have to go through life here in Latin America with that handicap. Now, back in those days, late 80s, early 90s, it was just so much harder to communicate with people down here if you didn't know Spanish. With no internet, no Google Translate, no AI helpers, it took a lot of effort. All of us gringos and expats back then just carried a little Spanish-English dictionary on us at all times. For language dunces like me, that was the only way you could get your point across or understand what anyone is saying. Even then, it was such a tedious process, you know, going to the dictionary, looking up things word for word. Of course, in no time, you pick up the common phrases, you know, buenos dias, el baño, the bathroom, and other words like cerveza, comida, hermano, hermana, niño, you know, those simple words. Mostly nouns, by the way. And believe me, if you only know nouns, like I did in the first couple of years, like referee, you know, refrigerator, mesa, desk, silla, chair. Well, if you only know nouns, you'll never be able to put a sentence together. Because you need some verbs to supply the action. And for us language dunces, that complicates things. Anyway, for me, there was a moment about 5 years in when I suddenly started to understand people. Now, of course, my understanding people was a lot better than my personally communicating with them. the Spanish words coming out of my mouth were kind of halting and hesitant, with the verbs, nouns, and adjectives sort of mixed up in the wrong order, but intelligible enough for most Latinos to get what I was trying to say. I'll put it this way. Before you get a decent command of the Spanish language, you'll have to spend some time murdering it. Oh, and you'll know you're murdering it, all right, when you see the look on the Latino's face you're trying to communicate with. You'll realize it and feel a bit dense when the person you're talking to doesn't seem to get what you're saying at all. And so you'll repeat it, maybe slower, maybe louder. Then, surprise, surprise, most times that person will get it, or some of what you're saying anyway. The thing is, don't be afraid to murder the language. You'll get used to feeling like a fool, even though Latinos will never treat you like one. Because, you see, they have great tolerance for gringos trying to speak their language. Unlike the people in some other countries, like France, for example. Oh, and just when you think you have it, when you think it's clicking in, and again, you'll realize that's happening. When Latinos you're talking to don't scrunch their faces and look confused when you're talking to them. When that stops happening, you'll think, man, I finally got it. You'll be so self-satisfied. That certainly happened to me, like I said, after about 5 years of living down here. Now, that self-satisfaction went on for about a year or two or three. Then you realize you're still only communicating like maybe a third grader. Simple, short sentences, small words, nothing fancy. So for me and a lot of gringos and expats who hit that plateau, once again, you start feeling some discontent. Like you've only just broken through the surface. You're only treading water. And nothing sort of drives that home harder is when you're at a party or sitting around with a bunch of Latinas or Latinos and they're making jokes with each other. They always do, laughing and chuckling, but you don't get the jokes at all. They just don't connect with you. And at first you think it's because they have a different, more childish sense of humor. And call me classist or racist, whatever. And in fact, they do. Their jokes and humor are very childish. In fact, their jokes and humor are super racist and super sexist. And believe me, would not be tolerated at all in the woke first world we come from. Let's just say the racist and sexist jokes you and I laughed at when we were high school and college kids are alive and well at parties and get-togethers here in Latin America. Even more childish than a stupid knock-knock joke. That's just the Latino and Latina sense of humor. But that's really not why us gringos and expats don't get the joke or don't laugh. Because, you see, I've noticed that when I translate a funny English joke into Spanish, you know, joining in at a party when everyone's joking and I get my chance, well, often the more intelligent Latinos in the crowd will get the joke and laugh. But more often than not, when the few who get it laugh, the rest will laugh along out of a sort of courtesy. Nope, they don't get the joke at all, but they laugh anyway. Often, you see, they'll laugh along with a blank stare on their faces, and you know they didn't get the joke. They're just being polite, as Latin culture sort of demands. So here's my observation about Latino humor, and many gringos and expats living down here certainly agree, but don't talk about it in mixed company. When you realize that the average person in Latin America has an IQ of about 85 and 100 is the norm up in the first world. Now, don't shoot the messenger. Look it up yourself. Check ChatGPT, Grok, Anthropic, any of them. Anyway, when a population's average IQ is 85, it's easy to see why sophisticated jokes with double and triple entendres just don't make the rounds here in Latin America. Those kind of jokes just don't land with an 85 IQ. But sexist, racist, and knock-knock jokes? Well, that kind of humor sucks in every common denominator. Same thing goes with Latino comedians here and TV shows, etc. It's just a bombardment of sexist and racist jokes. And Latinos laugh their asses off. Oh, and believe it or not, big cities here in Latin America have comedy clubs and famous comedians. And obviously, to get famous in that line of work, you have to know your crowd. And as a rule, comedians, the good ones, are highly intelligent. That's a proven fact in whatever country they live in. So the good ones, the successful ones, the ones that make a living at it, gauge the crowd and hit them with jokes they know they're going to understand. Now, here's the thing. I've actually spoken to a few Latino comedians. And to a person, they marvel at Latino comedians up in the States who have become famous with their take on Latino life in the United States. Most all Latino comics in the States do their shows in English and appeal to all crowds. I guess you could say the first one to come along was Freddie Prinze. Remember him? Had a famous TV show in the 70s called Chico and the Man. By the way, he committed suicide with a gun at 22. Aside from that, talking to a couple Latino comedians down here in Latin America, they tell me they admire Latino comedians up in the States who base their whole act on the Latino experience of immigrants in the States. Anyway, I was told that kind of Latino comedy up in the States could never translate down here to Latin America, even though it's Latinos who are doing that comedy. I was told down here, those kind of jokes would go over everyone's head, except, of course, with upscale, educated Latinos who travel back and forth to the States. They would get the jokes. But the average Latino, You gotta hit them with racist and sexist jokes, or they won't laugh. Oh, and you can throw in a few political jokes, too, and jokes about cops, because everyone knows how thoroughly corrupt the bureaucracy is down here. But I digress as usual. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Gringos and expats learning Spanish and hitting a certain plateau. Now, there's another interesting phenomena that happens often when a gringo has a Latina girlfriend who speaks no English, or a gringa, an American girl, has a Latino boyfriend who doesn't speak English. I'm telling you this because I've had this kind of conversation with many a gringa and gringo who've had Latino or Latina partners. They'll tell me that after they've been with their Latino or Latina partner for a year or two, speaking nothing but Spanish at home or in the car, whatever, they tell me it's the best way to upgrade their Spanish skills. And of course, that's nothing new. Everyone knows if you have a Latina girlfriend or Latino boyfriend who speaks no or little English, your Spanish skills within a few months will take a huge leap. And you'll certainly feel good about that. And as your Spanish language skills improve in a major way with your partner, you'll certainly gain self-confidence. But there'll come a time, and this has happened to me and almost every gringo expat I know who has been in that situation, there'll come a time when you realize that your mate, your better half, has accommodated to your particular Spanish language incongruities and inconsistencies. In other words, the way you screw up certain word endings consistently, as is your pattern, as you misplace and skip verbs and adjectives, as we do because it's not our primary language, because we all have a certain particular manner of speaking. The fact is, because you're isolated in an apartment or house with your Spanish-speaking better half, well, as you might imagine, your partner will get very used to your particular linguistic mannerisms and malapropisms, and he or she will soon understand you completely. But here's the rub. That does not necessarily translate to the outside world. That's what happened to me and just might happen to you too. After about 5 years of being here in Latin America, my Spanish started kicking in. Obviously, kicked in first with my girlfriend to an amazing degree. My girlfriend who spoke no English at all. And I was so happy, even thrilled with myself. What an accomplishment, huh? Anyway, soon enough, when we were out and about, as I'd converse with other Latinos in supermarkets, bars, restaurants, banks, etc., my girlfriend, who'd often accompany me, when I'd start to speak, say a sentence or ask a question to someone else, more often than not, she'd jump in and repeat what I'd just said. So why would she do that? Well, I soon realized. The other person would only catch part of what I said, didn't quite get the full meaning. But my girlfriend certainly did, because she knew my particular gringoized version of Spanish phrasing from day one. Now, we're talking about a long time ago when I noticed that was first happening, 25 or even 30 years ago. But guess what? That still happens to me today. Sometimes, not all the time. I'll be out and about with my girlfriend, speaking to a Latino or Latina in my gringoized Spanish, and when I've finished my bloviating, she'll repeat the same thing in a slightly different way, because she, with her Latina sensibilities, picked up on the fact that the other person was not necessarily understanding everything I was saying. Again, it's because us non-native speakers pick up and sometimes develop our own certain linguistic habits that don't connect completely with your regular Latino speakers. Does that make sense? Well, let's just say if you're down here long enough, you'll find all that out. It will happen to you. Unless, of course, you're one of those vast numbers of gringos and expats living on the gringo tourist trail, hanging with gringos and expats and living in gringoized subdivisions, etc., etc. Then you can forget everything I just said. Oh, well. All right, speaking of things you learn along the way living here in Latin America that you'll never learn living up in the United States, I'm talking about stuff that's almost never publicized up in the first world media. Speaking of the evils of immigration, illegal and otherwise, not up in the United States, but here in Latin America, wouldn't you like to know what Latin American people living down here think about illegal immigration? Not illegals entering the States, illegals entering their own Latin American countries. Well, in 2025, there was a huge poll taken in every Latin American country by a company called Latino Barometro. They do surveys down here, like Gallup poll does up in the States. Anyway, I'm looking at a chart right now, based on this poll, that says 8 in 10 Peruvians see immigration to their country as harmful, illegal or not. Though when the same poll was taken 5 years ago, Peru registered only 40% saying that immigration was harmful. Now it's double that, 80%, the worst in all of Latin America. Experts are saying this shift in perception stems from the greater visibility of Venezuelan migrants, who pretty much invaded all Latin American countries in the last 5 years. So here's what expert Latin American sociologists are concluding. They're saying that Peru was praised for its humanitarian response to the Venezuelan humanitarian crisis back in 2017. They took on a ton of Venezuelans. They said, come on down. With the country of Peru becoming home to the second largest Venezuelan diaspora in Latin America. Behind the number one Venezuelan destination, Colombia, only natural because they share a huge border with it. Turns out, as of late 2025, the census data in Peru shows that Venezuelans make up over 85% of all immigrants in Peru and are so visible in Peruvian cities that most Peruvians, according to this poll, 80% of them, are now pissed off that they let them in, claiming the national narrative on the streets of Peru with the locals is that the Venezuelan migration since 2017 has led to massive increases in crime, job scarcity, and institutional breakdown. Sound familiar? That same feeling is seen elsewhere in Latin America, where most Latin Americans, when polled, are convinced that migrants of any kind, legal or illegal, are threats to the local social order. And here we thought that kind of attitude only existed in the minds of citizens living in the U.S. and Europe. Nope, it turns out Latin Americans feel the same way about migrants moving into their countries. By the way, looking at this chart, based on the poll, there's a running list of Latin American countries who hate and fear immigration the most. Again, mostly spurred on by the Venezuelan diaspora. I mentioned Peru came out first, with 80.4% of its people polled saying they dislike, even hate, what recent immigrants have done to their country. So Peru came in at number one. Number two, surprisingly enough, is Ecuador. 80.2% of Ecuadorians say the same thing. Oh, and by the way, you might recall Ecuador is considered the number one gringo expat retirement destination in the world. So can we infer then, since 80% of Ecuadorians hate or dislike what immigration's done to their country, that they're including gringo expats in that group? I wonder. Not so far-fetched, huh? Since we do tend, when we come down in numbers, to outprice the locals in their own cities. Number three, Panama, with 76.7% of people polled saying they hate or dislike what recent immigrants have done to their country. Number four, Colombia, with 76.3% saying that. Number five, Bolivia. Number six, Dominican Republic, with 60% of people saying they hate or dislike what recent immigrants have done to their country. And they're not talking about Venezuelans in the DR. They're talking about Haitians, who, by the way, they regularly pick up and boot out of the country. Then, of course, they sneak right back in because there's no fence or wall between the two countries. Doesn't that sound familiar as well? So then, of all the 20 Latin American countries, who's on the bottom of that list? The people who accept immigration without too much negativity, even in the wake of this huge Venezuelan diaspora? Well, surprisingly enough, it's Argentina, where only 27% of people polled, about a quarter of them, dislike or hate what recent immigrants have done to their country. Though some experts claim it's because Venezuelans didn't storm into Argentina like they did the rest of Latin America, because Argentina has a super high cost of living. Same reasoning as to why a homeless person in the States would much rather live in Florida or California than Chicago or Canada, where you just freeze your ass off in winter. Whereas in Florida or California, you could just pitch a tent. All right, moving on. Something I've noticed over the years that's changed dramatically with gringo expats here in Latin America is that people just don't read books anymore. So I know you're thinking, what else is new? Man, I'll tell you, when I first got down here, practically every single gringo and expat I met down here, including backpackers, had a book or two on them. Again, that was before the internet, which changed everything. In fact, you heard me say this before, I'd be in a line at a bank or a government office. Often I'd be the only gringo there, in a line with maybe 10, 20, even 30 people, and I'd be the only one with a book. Though if there was another gringo or expat or backpacker in the line, it was almost certain they'd have a book too. So if reading books is a lost art, why am I bringing it up? Well, because I just stumbled onto a widely cited study from Yale that followed 3,635 adults over the age of 50 for 12 years. They found that the applicants who read books for 30 minutes or more daily lived an average 2 years longer than non-readers, even after adjusting for variables like age, gender, education, and health. You know, I brought this subject up to a number of Gringo and expats sitting around in little coffee clutch groups, and of course, most of them these days don't read books. Though they'll say in their defense that they read newspapers, magazines, and articles online, etc., etc. But interestingly enough, that Yale study showed that life-extending benefit of reading books was not correlated to those who read newspapers or magazines or just stuff online. Turns out, reading books seems to offer something uniquely protective, according to longevity specialists, who say when you sit down with a book, it requires deeper concentration than just skimming articles on the internet. You need more sustained focus, more active engagement, and a more relaxed environment, a more sustained attention span than what you need to flip through short articles on your phone and what little concentration it takes to scan condensed news blurbs. Another reason books may be so helpful in extending longevity is that immersing yourself in a character's life broadens emotional awareness. At least that's what the research suggests. But the question is, how do you get into the habit? Well, here's what I do. I kill two birds with one stone. I get on my treadmill for exactly 1 hour a day, and I read a book while I'm power walking. That way I get in at least 1 hour's worth of book reading a day. It works out to about a book a week. Been doing that for about 30 years now. Of course, there are some days I don't hit the treadmill, but I do it at least 5 days a week, except when traveling or on vacation. Oh, and funny thing about books, I used to think when I'd watch a podcast and I'd see a guy sitting in front of a giant bookcase, I used to wonder, did he or she read all those books? Well, guess what? Recently I was in a big department store and I saw in the home furnishing section. Now remember, we're talking about a big department store in a big mall in Latin America. Anyway, in the home furnishing section, they were selling fake books to put on your shelves. A long stack of maybe 7 or 8 books, the bookends that is. Dead ringers for real books, but were just cardboard boxes with the bindings and titles facing outward, with mostly titles of the classics. You know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire and stuff. Hemingway, Twain, Dickens. And man, I thought, what a world. If there is a God, he needs to hit that reset button. Though I do know, in the house I was growing up in, my mom, being a university professor, had books everywhere, and she read every one of them. And if way back when I was to say to my mother, you know, in the future they're going to have fake cardboard book facades that you could put on your shelves to make you seem educated and intellectual, she'd have said, don't be foolish. Who would ever stoop so low? Well, in fact, I know who would stoop so low. Lard-ass politicians, for example. Ever notice when they do a podcast or a speech out of the comforts of their own home, they're always sitting in front of a wall or shelf stacked with books? Do you really think any of those lying, lard-ass pieces of shit ever read any of those? All right, let's talk about some more things you don't find out unless you're living down here for a while. Wouldn't you like to know which Latin American countries have the worst power grids, the most frequent power outages and brownouts? Well, according to Siemens, you know, the big tech company, they make all that big-time medical and factory equipment, Siemens. They sell their stuff worldwide and have data on every country's power infrastructure. They have to know it, because power interruptions and brownouts damage electronic equipment. Anyway, according to Siemens, the Latin American countries with the worst electric grid infrastructures, number one is obvious, Venezuela. Number two, also obvious, Haiti. Number three, Honduras. Number four, Nicaragua. Number five, Brazil. With all five of those countries having between a 25 and 35% distribution loss in their power lines. That means for every 1,000 watts produced by a power generator, only about 600 to 750 watts makes it to the final destination where it gets utilized, like your neighborhood, your refrigerator, your TV. Whereas the rest of the Latin American countries, Panama, DR, Costa Rica, Colombia, Bolivia, Paraguay, Guatemala, Mexico, there's only about a 10% electrical transmission lost from where the power is generated in the plant to the final destination, like your home. Now, the Latin American country with the best, most solid electrical grid is Chile. The reason being the country's massive, energy-intensive mining industry, which demands a super solid grid, and therefore gets lots of investment from transnationals who have a large stake in the mining business. So the lesson here is those five Latin American countries with the worst electrical grid, Brazil, Nicaragua, Honduras, Venezuela, Haiti, 25 to 35% of all the electricity their plants produce is lost, just wastes away. In any event, if you've got any land or roof space at all, it doesn't matter where you live, you should try to go solar and get the hell off the grid, or at least partially off the grid. Then guess what? You won't have to give a damn about any of this stuff. Speaking of Nicaragua, a country we don't speak much of at all because I don't recommend living there. Anyway, the latest news out of that country, and I don't think most first world people have ever heard this, is that Daniel Ortega, the president, says there will be no more elections for Nicaragua. No more. Does that sound like a good Plan B destination, a place where the president said there will be no more elections? Anyway, this happened last month when Daniel Ortega announced he's eliminating the possibility of an electoral challenge when his term ends next year. He says there will be no more elections, and him and his wife will continue to rule the country. By the way, he's held power since 2007 and was president for a term in the 80s, too. Anyway, he was quoted last month in the press saying, quote, "There will be no more elections here for them to try to seize government and seize power." He said that in a speech last month. In a speech commemorating the 1979 Sandinista Revolution, in which he helped overthrow the U.S.-backed Anastasio Somoza dictatorship. In that speech, he was also quoted as saying, and I'll translate here, "The days when parties backed by the Yankees, the U.S., and the Somocistas will return to power are over. Never again," he said. By the way, he's 80 years old. Oh, and there's one more point of interest before we close out today. You know, of the 150 or so countries that are in debt to the IMF, you know, the International Monetary Fund, you know, the biggest banksters in the world, you might be interested to know who the top five biggest debtors are, the countries with the largest outstanding loans owed to the IMF. Here's the top five, and it will surprise you. The number one debtor to the IMF is Argentina at $42.5 billion. Number two, you'll never guess, but it makes sense, Ukraine. Number three, well, nobody cares, it's neither here or there, but it's Pakistan. Number four, a huge surprise, it's tiny Ecuador. And you wonder, well, I certainly did, how could that be? Ecuador, you know a little Ecuador. Rated the number one retirement destination for gringos and expats, I don't know how many years running. They're so heavily in debt, they're absolutely owned by the international banksters, which made them easy pickings for the Chinese government, who they're super indebted to as well. So does Ecuador still sound like a good Plan B destination to you?
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.